Welcome back to Arts About.
Show about art that's a work of art in itself, as I've said before, Sally.
Once or twice, John. Yeah. Yes, you have. And you're in the studio today with me, Sally Bellew, John Baird, and Mark Stewart, and of course, Brody at the Knobs. Or sliders, I should say. Perhaps he flinched when I said that. Arts About is, of course, brought to you by the generosity of the McClelland Sculpture Park and Gallery and facilitated by the Bendigo Bank Studio. John, What fabulous story are you going to give us this week?
Oh, crosstown traffic, you know, in a kind of an art ambulance.
Oh, an art ambulance.
Well, yes.
That's exciting.
No sirens, but there was definitely a very sick painting in the back.
Ooh, okay. Not the one that flew off the back of the Bentley.
No.
No, another one. Great. Okay. Terrific. And Mark Stewart's in here again at the beginning of the show. Hi, Mark. Thanks for coming in.
My pleasure.
What have you got for us this week?
I'm going to speak about the McClelland Gallery again. Mm-hmm. Even though they're the station sponsors, I'm going to criticise them a little bit and encourage them in other ways.
Fabulous. Well, that's good. We need a little bit of that kind of dialogue. Fantastic. We've also got coming in on the phone, actually, this morning, Nicholas Thompson from the gallery of the same name. He's going to join us to discuss Suzanne Archer and the survey exhibition he's hosting there of her work, which spans nearly 50 years of her artistic practice. Mm.
That's pretty good too, I reckon.
Yes, yes.
What I've seen.
Well, we haven't seen, we haven't been up
there
yet.
What you've seen photographs of.
Yes. Yeah. Well, still, you can tell whether something is courageous or not, looking at a photograph.
I guess
absolutely.
You can.
Absolutely, yeah. I also thought it was time to reach into the closet and give Island King an Australasian adventure by the wonderful radio serial written and produced by Swanee himself. I think it deserves another airing. And apart from the ridiculous bit parts played by he and I, includes the rather stellar cast of Andrew Curry, Kate Jenkinson and the late Doug Tremlett. There's 13 parts. We've played it before, I know, but it was a long time ago, and I think it was long enough ago for listeners to have forgotten it if they heard it for the first time anyway. So it deserves another play. So we're going to hear the first episode this week called Death in the Pacific. Now, while I get Nicholas Thompson on the phone to talk about Suzanne Archer, here's Manu Chao, who's a French-born Spanish musician. He sings in all sorts of many languages, French, Spanish, English, Italian, Arabic, Catalan, Galician, and apparently others.
All at once?
No, different parts in different songs. And he's
very good.
Oh, he's fabulous.
Great to dance to.
Yeah, absolutely. He began his musical career busking in Paris, and then he and his brother Antoine Chow founded the band Mano Negro in 87. He became a solo artist after its breakup in 95 and now tours regularly with his live band Radio Bemba. I saw them in Melbourne at the Metro a couple of years ago, and it's one of the best gigs I've ever been to. It was so fabulous. Here he is with a track on an album called Esperanza, with a track called Me Gustas Tu. Suzanne Archer is an Australian visual artist whose survey exhibition Moving Forwards, Looking Back, a survey 1969 to 2016, is opening at the Nicholas Thompson Gallery in Langridge Street, Collingwood, on December the 17th. It's a celebration on a practice that spans nearly 50 years, and her work reflects her many travels through Africa, Asia, Europe of the USA and China, and includes residencies at the Green Street Studio in New York, the Power Studio at City Internationale in Paris, and the Redgate Residency in Beijing. She has an extensive exhibiting history and has received numerous awards, including the prestigious Dobell Prize for Drawing in 2010 and the Wynne Prize in 1994. Her work's widely represented in major art galleries, notably the Australian National Gallery, the National Gallery of Victoria and the Art Gallery of New South Wales, as well as in regional galleries across the country. The survey exhibition about to open at the Nicholas Thompson Gallery in Collingwood includes her collage work of the 60s and 70s, landscapes of the 80s and 90s, and her meditations on mortality of the 2000 and 2010s. From 1969 to 2016, the work selected in the exhibition morph from her early explorations in abstraction and text to develop later into more figurative and metaphorical subjects, demonstrating an established artist who throughout her life has maintained a passion to find new subjects and points of inspiration. Director of the Nicholas Thompson Gallery, Nicholas Thompson himself, is on the line to tell us more about this fascinating artist and entice us to go and have a look ourselves. Good morning, Nicholas.
Good morning, Sally. Thank you for having me.
You're very welcome. Nicholas, who is Suzanne Archer and what's so interesting to you about her career?
Well, Suzanne Archer is an Australian artist who's been practising since the 1960s. And she's really had a very strong exhibiting history throughout her career. The exhibition that opens here on Saturday the 17th includes works, as you said, from the 60s to the present. But in terms of her contribution to Australian art history, I think she really demonstrates an artist with a solid background and someone who does have a really proven track record. I think she's a really interesting example of an artist who is now at a stage where she's kind of at a point where she's happy to look back over what she's done and also look forward to where she's moving towards. I first encountered Suzanne Archer through a very famous book on Australian art called Present Day Art Australia, which was produced in 1969. And she's the first artist listed in that book. She was 24, so she was the youngest artist included. And I'd always kind of been intrigued by her, and I knew that her work was widely collected in the 60s and 70s by the National Gallery of Australia, the National Gallery of Victoria, and in the 90s she'd won the Wynne Prize. But she's one of those figures in Australian art history who emerges in different places, and I was really intrigued to try and have a look at where she'd been and look at where she's going in the future as well.
I love that. I read the catalogue or the bit of the catalogue that you were able to send me earlier, and clearly memories play a really big part in that. And I love that story, I think, that described her using that notebook that she, because she'd moved so early in her life that she didn't have childhood photographs and so on, and so she compiled this book, and that yeah. created the fodder for a lot of these for a lot of her work.
Yes. No, it's a really interesting process, and we were putting together the show. She'd actually had an exhibition, a survey exhibition at Macquarie University in Sydney, and I went to see that. It was just such a knockout exhibition. I said to her, could we have a smaller version of this at my gallery at the end of the year once that show's ended? And she was very happy to do that. And when we were putting together the catalogue, I said, why don't we pull some works from throughout your career, and you can maybe say a little bit about where you were at that time. And it's proved to be a really interesting document, I think. There's a really nice little catalogue, about 34 pages, that we've put together. And it's really interesting seeing what she was moving through and what her concerns were at the time, you know, in the 60s and 70s, as her work, as we said, was more abstract, and how it moved towards more landscape-based when she moved to the Wedderburn region of New South Wales. And more recently, as she's been investigating ideas of mortality and the, I guess, more metaphorical representations that have emerged. But yeah, a really interesting artist, and an artist who's been very generous with her history. I think it's very difficult, or not difficult. It's the point of tension, I think, for artists. You know, at what point do you start looking back at what you've done without kind of sacrificing your current work? And I think what the work that we've included includes. I mean, the most recent work was from 2016, from a residency that she'd completed in China. And I think it makes a really kind of interesting way of looking back at what she's done and where she's moving to in the future.
And it includes sculptural work as well, doesn't it?
This show is just painting and works mm-hmm. on paper, but she does work in sculpture. She's a very broad practice. She produces a sculpture, assemblage, artist books, collage. But for this show, we thought we'd just look at the two-dimensional work. So it was works on paper and painting, just due to the size of the gallery as well. I don't have a huge space, but I think the work we've included creates a really interesting survey of the painting and two-dimensional work.
She loves a skeleton, doesn't she?
She does, yes. Well, I mean, that's a very interesting point that she's moved to. She completed a residency at the Sydney University Veterinary School in 2005, where she was watching the dissections and documenting the dissections, and that's really kind of fed into the work. And living in Wedderburn, where she's part of there's quite a vibrant artist community around there. Some other well-known Australian artists, such as Elizabeth Cummings and Suzanne's partner, David Fairburn, also live in that area. But, you know, it's being out in the bush and being around, you know, life and death and animal skeletons, and that's all kind of fed into the work.
I saw a lovely little video piece, actually. I think it might have, I'm not sure where it was, whether it was in the archives in New South Wales or something, but it was an interview with her in her studio, and she was talking a little bit about the found objects that she had around her. It was very cluttered, but there happened to be like a full-size live desiccated kangaroo carcass hanging from the ceiling.
Yes, yeah, there's the...
which I think appears in the work you've got in this exhibition, doesn't it?
It does, yes. Mm. So that work does appear in one of the paintings from 2007. So it's great to have that that reference to her current studio. But in 2010, she won the Deauville Prize, the drawing prize, with a picture of a self-portrait, and the kangaroo also featured in that as well.
Mm. Tell me, does a survey show include works for sale, or are they already from owned collections?
These works are all for sale. So these are all from the artist's studio. The survey that she had recently at Macquarie University included works loaned from Campbelltown Regional Arts Centre and from the Art Gallery of New South Wales. But no, this show, all works are from the artist's studio and they're all for sale. And it actually includes two works that were earlier than the works included at Macquarie University show. There's a work from the 1960s. And one for the 1970s as well. So it's very, very special having those two earlier works in there as well to give that kind of complete, or as complete as you can get with a nice overview of her practice.
You've had her in there before, haven't you?
I have, yes. I had an exhibition of Suzanne's last year, which had a great response. The Age gave it a great review, which was terrific. And it was really interesting the way that it resonated with a lot of younger artists as well. I know there's a lot of younger artists who are planning on coming to the opening and meeting Suzanne, which I think is really exciting, and it's great to have that generational influence. I think it's terrific.
Now, what have you got coming up next?
I've got this show opens on the 17th and it runs until the 23rd of December, so right up to Christmas, and then the gallery is closed for about 3 or 4 weeks. It opens again on the 17th, and the exhibition the 14th, the exhibition concludes on the 29th.
Oh, so you do get a little Christmas holiday in there.
Yeah, I did have a little break.
Everybody
knew. Yeah. But so the show will have another 3 weeks after we get back though on the 14th. And then after that I have an exhibition of Guy Warren's, which will be all recent works on paper. And Guy is 95 and still working. And
wow.
He had a survey exhibition at the S.H. Irvine Gallery in Sydney, which had a terrific response, and the ABC Radio National kind of profiled it in quite a bit of detail. So it's a real privilege working with him, and it'll be a really nice show of works on paper. And then I've got another show of Sarah Faulkner's in March, which I'm really looking forward to as well. She's made some really terrific landscape paintings. So, it'll be a really good year, I think.
Well, she's a friend of the show, of course, Sarah Faulkner.
She is, yes. I think we've spoken about her before.
Yeah,
she's another
have.
Terrific artist. Yeah.
We're very impressed to see your gallery included in Bell Magazine's list of the top Australian commercial galleries, Nicholas. That's pretty fabulous, isn't it?
It's wonderful. Yeah, no, Bell have been very, very supportive since I opened, and I think they really do a great thing in their profiles of the exhibitions that are on in every issue that comes out. And I feel very very humbled to be in that lineup. There's some really terrific Australian galleries in there, so that's really lovely of them, I think.
Mm. So Suzanne Archer survey exhibition Moving Forwards Looking Back, a survey 1969 to 2016 is on at the Nicholas Thompson Gallery, Langridge Street, Collingwood, from the 17th of December, as Nicholas just said, all the way through with a gap in between to the 29th of January. It's a great pleasure having you on the show today. Thanks so much for talking to us, Nicholas Thompson.
Thanks, Sally. Thanks for having me.
Great. See you soon.
See you. Thanks. Bye.
So, crosstown traffic. Now, that's a very unusual subject for you, John.
That's a great song.
Oh,
Jimi Hendrix.
Yeah. Oh, there we are. I didn't get the reference, that's all.
No, well, it isn't a reference. I've just thought of it then.
Ah.
But when I was a picture framer...
Yes, I love how you say picture.
Mm-hmm. Picture framer. I was working with the fellow who employed me, and we were dealing with a large, elaborate and much sought after, very expensive painting, Australian painting,
mm-hmm.
Which was in a frame that I'd done some regilding on.
Yes.
And essentially a big picture frame like that has two bits, an inner bit and an outer bit. The slip is the inner bit, and we just put that back into the large outer frame, and we picked it up in order to look at the painting and see whether or not everything was looking right at the front of it. And the slip fell out of the big frame, and the painting landed on a jar full of scissors and pencils, and it put a hole in the middle of the painting that you could kick a footy through.
Oh, my goodness.
So... we knew that...
Whose painting was it, John?
Well, I'm not going to talk about it. But, and you'll understand why.
Right.
But the painting was really, really badly damaged. So I was told, look, we need to get this to the restorers because It's going into Sotheby's tomorrow night to be sold, and it's actually on the front cover of the Sotheby's catalogue, you know.
Right.
And so it was a van, and we put the injured painting into the van, and my employer said to me, get across to Collingwood.
Now.
get this painting in front of them. I don't care how many Brett Whiteleys he's forging, just get him to work on this.
Oh, and so we know who that might be. Yes, okay.
So I raced across town, and that was where the ambulance trip comes into things, because I'd also been told, don't worry about speeding tickets, just get across there. This thing's got to start happening now, you know. And I had the most wonderful drive across town in a van with a desperately injured painting in the back, two wheels around corners and
running red lights.
No, I didn't run any red lights. I didn't want to do any more damage to me or the picture. But I got it across town and sat nervously in the waiting room while they operated on it.
Oh, my goodness me.
But essentially what happens with a painting on linen with oil paint on it, was even though it was very old oil paint, the fact that it had happened very recently meant that they could pretty well lay it down and stitch it all back together, and each little linen thread could go back to where it was supposed to be, and then they patched up the paint on the front of it, and they put a big patch on the back of it to hold it all together, and then a couple of other ones just to sort of
cover it up.
You know, sort of lead the eye elsewhere. And then the next day we took it back and we put it in the frame and back in the van.
How many hours did it take?
It took overnight, actually. I went home, but I went back in the morning. And I got it in the morning and looked absolutely fine. And back in the van, back to the framers, and then we put it all
everybody
together.
Everybody would have been so freaked out.
Checked it out, put it all together, and then over to Sotheby's.
Yeah.
And I went to Sotheby's that night, and $3.5 million.
Man.
And I know where the painting is. Do you? And I must say, I like going and just standing in front of it and looking at it and having a little memory, just the two of us.
Which presumably means it's in a public space.
It is, yeah.
Oh, and you're not going to tell us where.
Well, it's in the Australian Gallery, in Canberra. Oh. Every time I go to Canberra, I go and visit it.
Man, that is incredible.
And it might possibly be a Brett Whiteley.
It's not a Brett Whiteley. No. It was an old painting back.
Yes. Oh, that is incredible. Well, I wonder how many stories like that there are around, you know.
Many.
Yeah, I bet there are.
But I'm really looking forward to hearing about the French woman in the trench coat and nothing else, John.
Mark's been,
a much more interesting story.
Been taunting John with a story that he's supposed to tell us, which I'm not sure John
will save it up. It's more of a kind of a wintry story.
It's a wintry story. Is it all right then?
Well, she was naked underneath, John. It can't be that wintry.
Trench coat. All right, I'm making a note of it.
It was a French apartment.
Trench coat story. Okay, it's down in the list, John. All right, wonderful. Thank you for that. And what are we going on to now? I've lost
there was a song, I thought.
Oh, we are. Yeah, let's have a listen to John Handy, Hard Work. Coming up next is the beginning of a radio play written by the extremely talented Peter Swan, a.k.a. Swanee, and recorded here at the RPP studios a couple of years ago, starring, among others, Andrew Curry and Kate Jenkinson, with a few bit parts played by Peter Swan himself, the late Doug Tremlett, and myself. I thought over summer we should replay them today. Episode 1 of Island King, Death in the Pacific, kicks off this wonderful and hilarious Australasian adventure.
Island King, an Australasian adventure starring Andrew Curry and Kate Jenkinson. Death in the Pacific, Episode 1, Stormy Weather. After a month's easy trading through the islands near Tahiti, Will King and his crew have run headfirst into a Force 6 storm as they desperately try to clear a reef and run for home.
Get a light on the water, Lionel! Find me a gap in the blasted coral!
Right, Skipper!
Keep her straight! We go side on, we go over! Can you see Salamander Point, Jock?
Aye, Skip. Three lights just to starboard. So near yet so bloody far away.
Give us a joke, Jock. We could use a laugh.
There's nothing funny about dog paddling to shore with a month's hard work on the bottom.
Not to mention the Katrina.
Aye, not to mention our sweet princess.
The news better be good, Lionel.
We're right over it, Skipper. No more than 3 feet at best.
Oh, blast. We need a fathom at least.
Suffering cats, Will. We're goners.
Never the optimist, mate.
This is worse than dodging the Gestapo clown in Nice.
Give me the German army anytime.
Diesel can't hammer this hard much longer, Skipper.
I just need those lights on my bow. The reef drops away on that line there.
A shove from a breaker would be handy.
Ooh, what would Jimmy Swan be doing now?
Jimmy would be getting up a mob for darts at the Black Prince.
The married chaps would be hurrying to catch the 529 at Barrington Street too.
Do you miss it, Jock?
Why miss that cozy rabbit warren at Clark Jardine Insurance Broker?
Morning tea at 10, lunch 12 to 12.30.
Civvy Street. With all its mind-numbing inevitability.
Precisely.
Ask me that again after we get over this one.
Ha ha! That's the spirit.
What about you, Will King? Youngest Winco in the RAF, the DFC and 33 confirmed kills? You could have written your own ticket. Old Banzi was just marking time before he made you a fool partner.
You're forgetting it all came at a price, mate.
Aye. That's right. The eyelash-flapping Peggy Barnes. The youngest daughter of Sir Clive. A not unattractive prospect.
True.
But I'm guessing she was making your future a wee bit too certain.
I'd rather be dropping out of the sun onto a load of hunkles.
Or ripping the keel out of the SS Katrina at 2,000 hours off Mangareva, 1,200 nautical miles from Tahiti.
Not if I can help it, mate.
We're too heavy, Skipper.
I'm not ditching one coconut. The price of copra's low enough as it is.
Spoken like a true Scotsman. What about you, Lionel? Do we turf the cargo?
Not on your life, Skip. I got my eye on the Kahana over in Papa 18.
And that's bloody it. Drop the engine. I'll bear away so we stand off. And when we get a good set of breakers, I'll point her up again and we'll scoot over just like a Hawaiian on a plank.
Oh, scooting, is it? Any cry for want of silver, but none for want of cents. You're mad, Will King.
Wouldn't have it any other way. We're going to heel over, so hold on. You on the throttle, Lionel?
Aye, Skip.
He's the main. All the way.
She'll tip, you damn fool.
Maybe.
Oh, Hail Mary full of grace.
Let her go, Jock.
Oh!
Hey, no time for that life jacket, mate.
I can see the bloody keel, Will.
Stand fast. We can do this. Steady. Steady. Righto. Sheet the main in hard. Come on, come on. Bring it in. We've got that following sea. Give her the gun, Lionel.
Woohoo! Something cats.
Will the plucky lads make it over the reef with their boat and lives intact? Be sure to tune in to the next exciting episode of Island King! Island King is written by Peter Swan and starred Andrew Curry, Kate Jenkinson, Doug Tremlett, and Nick Farnell, with Sally Bellew and Peter Swan in supporting roles. Sound production by Steve Myers. Tune in each day to Drive at 5:05 for the next exciting episode!
There we are, the first episode up and running.
Fabulous, and setting the tone, you know. Yes. Got Scottish deckhands talking about mind-numbing inevitability.
Oh, that was such fun to do it anyway. So we're going to be playing the rest of that 13 episodes over the next month or so. Now, Mark Stewart.
Yes, well, I don't want to bite the hand that feeds.
Oh, no. Dear.
Or, no. As the French say, spit in your soup.
No, we don't particularly want to
but
do that.
I must admit that the McClellan Gallery is a very strange place. It seems to have become architecturally truncated somehow. I don't know how it was originally built, but that L shape doesn't seem to work so well.
So they've got three exhibiting galleries there and a cafe.
Yeah, and the cafe. Yeah. And as we both saw the other day, the cafe was chock-a-block and the museum was basically empty, which is great. I'm happy to
say. It's rather nice.
It is.
To be able to breeze about.
Yeah, but apparently this is the future. As I was saying before, the MoMA in New York is doubling the size of its cafe and the shop size, so that it's all about merchandising and consuming, which I guess is the way it's going to be. But to get back to the McClellan Gallery, I think the gardens are a bit of a mess and half of the sculptures should be taken to the Taieb Tip. There's some very good pieces there.
Yeah. Mm.
There are.
At the Taieb Tip.
Rush down. It's a lovely place. But I wanted to talk about the show, the human-animal show curated by Janine Burke,
yep.
Who was on the show the other day, who's a lovely woman.
Yep.
seems. She's written an excellent essay in the catalogue, but it's in fact a perfect example of how words and what she has written, a description of the works in the exhibition, are much more interesting than the works themselves.
Right.
Now, I think this happens quite often. There is, it's an ongoing problem, because when exhibitions are created, the curator has an idea, a theme, and the artists have to fit into the theme. And I think this is often a big mistake, because you're just getting all these groups, separate works put together under an apparent theme, and they don't seem to really go very well together.
Or sometimes, okay, I think that the artist has a point, or the curator has a point of view, that he is using other artists to, he's using artists' work to kind of validate
the idea that she's already had.
Yeah.
And I think I think it's a problem that curators have come to the fore in the last 10 years, much more than the artists themselves. And so I think it's something which is getting a little bit out of hand. And I don't think it really works that well, because it's all about a theme. It's not about the artwork itself. So they get lost amongst each other somehow. Mm.
Do you know, I'm sure that to some extent what drives that is the corporate sponsorship of such events.
Yeah.
You know, because as you know, we're seeing, and in fact John Cunningham was on the show a few weeks ago and actually told us, to my great horror, that they only receive something like 3% of their funding from the government.
Yeah. Yeah, this is hence why the cafes are doubling in size and the merchandising. It's all about, you know, they do need the funding. But unfortunately the art is left as a reason for the curator to make a show. I don't know, you know, exactly how much do curators get paid?
I have no idea. I can't imagine that there's a scale for curatorial work. I'm sure it's
not per the hour anyway.
I'm sure it's, you know, dependent on who that person is.
The building itself, Mark, which is at the mercy of the architecture, essentially, what they do in there. And I have to point out that Mark and I were in there the other day, and there was one small room that Mark wouldn't let me go into.
Oh, was that the little room up on the stairs? Why wouldn't you let him go in?
Because it didn't have anything to do with the show somehow, did it? Yeah. It was something about it that really I found quite distasteful.
So anyway, I didn't see what was going on in there. But I can tell you that quite unusually, and in fact in an opposite way to normal, the only things that I found utterly engaging in that show were what were on video screens. Mm. Normally I would ignore video screens and look at the rest, but there were two video screens in there that were quite engaging.
Yep.
In
which
more
ones
ways
were
than
they?
That was the
sculptures
ant,
in...
the sculptures that Jason...
In Cancun,
what's his name?
McClare or St. Clair or something like that, isn't it?
Jason DeCare Taylor.
Yeah.
The underwater one.
The underwater sculptures, which he's made. It's for two reasons. It's become a sculpture park for coral. Yeah. And we saw the coral growing all over the sculptures. There's a Volkswagen and a piano and actually quite a beautiful... It's become one of the 25 top... areas to
visit in
to
the
visit,
world.
Yes. And the other one were the ant, the what are they called? The saw cutting ants, the leaf cutting ants.
Yes, weren't they?
Which
wonderful.
Was a beautiful, lovely music made by a woman, what's her name? Catherine Chambers.
Yes.
Chambers, which is very good. But then we had people like Elizabeth Presser and her Architecture for Bees, which was just a messy primary school bits of pieces, and you shouldn't. It sounds great, but when you see the sculpture, it's just a mess of bit of wire and a bit
the
of.
The thing
wax.
That was good about that, though, was the beehive outside.
Yeah,
it was just swarming
with
bees.
Bees.
It was so wonderful to be that close to a hive, wasn't
That's
it?
That's true. Yeah, that was a good part. Thank God for the bees. And there was Vera Mola's colourful bits of plaster, which were just sort of playful bits and pieces. It just doesn't work.
Yeah,
broken pots.
Broken pots as well. The guy singing, playing the clarinet to the birds. With
I love that.
Yeah.
Yes.
That was a lovely thing. So I just want to know, do you know about the hierarchy of the arts?
I don't know what you mean.
Is considered the highest art in
the land?
Well, in general.
No.
Music is considered the highest
music,
art.
Music, yes. Okay.
By whom?
I knew you were going to ask this question, John. It's just a generally accepted fact by most people that music is considered the highest of the arts because it's most abstract and universal. Mm-hmm. Okay. And this is why, you know, when you're coming back to the curators and how they're putting paintings and trying to describe things, my feeling is that paintings can't describe things. It's not a, you know, the whole idea of painting is that it's a mystery and that there's really, you know, you don't need to describe anything with a painting. It exists by itself, even more so a sculpture.
Okay. So, but you do, on the other hand, need to engage people in some way. So,
well, this is what seems to be happening, especially around in, you know, in, on the peninsulas, that people need to seem to have to be, you know, that something has to be described so they can go and see it's about something. It's not just a painting about itself.
Mm.
Okay, so it's getting back to this idea about, you know, creating a show about a theme. I think it's a mistake in many ways. I think it's interesting. It's great that people can be interested in what's going on, but it actually demeans the paintings and the sculptures.
Mm.
Well, curating a show means that you're relying on other people's art in order to describe
something you're
interested in, which is a difficult process. It's a bit like commissioned paintings, where someone will ask you to make a painting and they've got an idea in their mind of what they want, but
yeah,
that's not obviously what you're going to do.
Well, it depends how much they're paying, I guess.
Well, you can get as near as possible, but there's always going to be a difference, you know, and curators can't, in fact, tell other people what to do. All I can do is use what's there.
Absolutely. And this is why you see there's a disparate collection of different things which actually don't really have that much to do with the exhibition. It's just, you know, you can talk about it. She describes it very well. You must read the
her essay is terrific, very good. Isn't it?
While Mark and I were there was one of the works, there's that red string work in, like, that kind of three-dimensional...
The hangings...
Yes.
Well,
yes.
No, not the hangings. It's some stretched red cord.
Yeah, that's the one. Yes, hangings.
And
is Elizabeth Presser.
While Mark and I were looking at it, one of the women in the gallery came dashing over it very excitedly and said, "Look at this," and pointed in there, and there was a spider in there. And she was very excited about that because the whole thing looks a little bit like a spider web. And the fact that there was a spider in there, she found incredibly exciting.
Oh, that's the Sandra Selig one.
Yeah.
Yes.
Because she had the spider webs, which she'd sprayed enamel paint on, which in 2007 looked very fresh and lovely, but looking a bit tired
Spider webby,
falling to pieces.
I did see a fabulous exhibition of spider webs actually years ago in the Berkeley Gallery, which is attached to the university in, obviously, in San Francisco. And they were 3D, the 3D sculptures, and they were Perspex boxes in which spiders had spun webs and then they'd been lit really beautifully. They were exceptional.
And McClellan had a show of bird's nests.
Yeah, they did a few years ago.
That Donna, was also Janine Burke.
Yes, it was. Right. Yes, that was Janine Burke's book.
Mm.
She'd written a book about it. Yes.
Birds are better than spiders. Birds eat spiders.
Well, they do, yes.
Hang on, John.
And that's a bit of a value judgment.
Yes, absolutely. What about the huntsman? It's a great spider.
Hey, we're running out of time. We thought we had masses of it.
Go and see the exhibition. It's worth seeing. And go and have a coffee in the cafe. It's good coffee.
Yes.
Well,
the truth is, of course, is that they need as much... they do bring us extraordinary work. And, you know... what's being forced upon lots of these artistic institutions is that they have to work out ways of mass appeal. And I think that is why they do things like bring in curators, and not specifically this exhibition, but I think that is why, because they're trying to open it up to people who might not necessarily...
Well, exactly. This is what's happening in National Gallery in Victoria. They're putting all the fashion shows on.
Yes.
To bring in women, apparently.
Yes.
Coming up at the NGV.
Coming up.
Christian Dior.
And there's Kylie now. Kylie's dresses are in there as well.
Mm. Right. Yes.
Okay. Well, I can't wait for the Dior. It's not quite Balenciaga, but, you know.
Yeah. It's still up there. Now,
I'd like to see you in a Dior dress, John.
Cliff's having a holiday, so he's in place of Cliff this week because he's away for a couple of weeks. Here's a song from a poet, John Cooper Clarke, that always makes me think of Cliff. So I'm keeping a little bookmark for Cliff in the show today. So that was for you, Cliff.
Mm. G'day, Cliff. How are you going, mate? Cliff's not here,
is he? I can hear the music.
I
can barely hear. I think it might be time for the news. Is it time for the news, Brody? It's very quiet. There, I can hear it now. Oh, yes, it's time for the news. Suzanne Archer is a survey exhibition on at the Nicholas Thompson Gallery in Langridge Street, Collingwood, opening on the 17th of December.
And can I say, yes, from what I've seen,
yes,
uncompromisingly courageous.
Her work?
Yeah.
Yeah, it looks pretty fabulous, doesn't it? I didn't know anything about her until we spoke.
Peninsula Summer Music Festival is happening again in the early new year. Go to peninsulafestival.com.au.
Mm.
And see what's going on there. And also in the bar garden next door to Three Palms, all summer music every day.
Oh, is there?
Yep.
Oh, fantastic. Mm. Every evening?
Afternoon and evening,
oh,
yeah.
Oh, fantastic.
You know who's doing all that? Or no. Organising, booking it all, I guess. Is.
Really, yeah.
Young Lucky, who we haven't had in here for a while. We should get Lucky back in here.
Let's get Lucky back in here, yes. Mm. He should come in maybe in the next couple of weeks and tell us what's going on there.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. Will you ask him?
Yep.
McClelland's new show, or not quite so new anymore, Human Animal Artist, is on at McClelland. Better go and have a look at that.
And if you're having a coffee while you're in there, mm-hmm, and they refuse to sell you a coffee, just tell them that John Cunningham invited you there, as Mark did.
Oh, very good, yes. Did they get you coffee then? Did
oh,
they?
Yeah.
They did.
Christmas on at Whistlewood. I think they've had two weekends. I think this afternoon is the second, the end of the second of them. Although, if you're interested in going down there, I'd check with them because I think they're going to open up a bit more over summer. Okay. They've also got an exhibition, a landscape exhibition, coming up on January the 9th or 8th, that we're going to talk to Susan about that in the next week or two.
NGV, Hockney Schmockney.
Nice one, John. Moth, Friday 6th of January. Luluk, that's the first Friday of January. If you're not a member of Moth, you should be a member of Moth, because then you'll get to hear about what's coming up.
I think you missed one as well, the Frank, what is it, Create?
Oh, we did,
had
yes.
Their exhibition, Divergent, opening on January the 8th.
Yes, indeed. We had the girls in the studio last week talking about that exhibition.
In the old dental clinic.
Yeah, is that what it, yeah, that's right, the dental clinic down
it's
in
an exhibition
in
of
Beach Street.
Paintings or?
Yes, it is their paintings, yeah, yes. Right.
And drawings and various other bits and pieces. Stuff. Mofo's coming up, Sally. I know Sally's excited.
I am
and,
excited.
And I don't know whether she can get down there or not, but I'm sure if she can, she will.
And so should you.
I will be going.
Yes, very good. Jason Coleman's returning to the foreshore. I think his show's opened already. Birds, Flight Paths in Australian Art on at the MPRG. Look, if you've just tuned in, it was a little bit late. You've missed Arts About. You can catch up with the show via podcast, which apparently is up to date now, I have been told. Or listen to the repeat on Wednesdays at 12. You can find a link to our Facebook page on the RPP website. So join us again 11 o'clock next Sunday. Remember, which is Christmas Day, everybody.
Mm.
And remember, everybody, we may not know everything about art.
Mark knows what he doesn't like.
Ooh, yes.
Brody's wondering about it. Sit down, Mark. No need to leave just yet.
I'm not going, John. Don't you worry.
Thanks, Brody.